number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
All right, I'm not Nostradamus, okay? I said last week we should be paying attention to Xavier. Watch out for Xavier. I gave you a whole bunch of reasons. Now Seton Hall comes in to spoil that party, knocking off the Musketeers. Listen, this is what it's like in college basketball. It's been like this the whole year, in case you haven't been paying attention. You get ranked or you get up, you beat a team, you get noticed, people start paying attention, you get some love, boom, you're bound to fall down. Good game, though, by Seton Hall. Very good game. Good defensive effort. That's what you have to do against Xavier. They did it. We have been having a topsy-turvy, fun year in college basketball. In fact, Scott Phillips will join us at the bottom of the hour to talk about the best conference in college basketball, and that belongs to the Big 12. They possibly will put seven teams into the NCAA tournament with the addition of Texas Tech, Tubby Smith's team. So Scott Phillips will join us. We'll talk about them and Kansas as they have yet another, at least a share of the division title. That is 12 in a row for the Jayhawks. College basketball is crazy. We'll get to that coming up. Woody Page of the Denver Post has made the claim that Peyton Manning is done and he will retire. That announcement is expected to come this week. The Broncos immediately put out a tweet out of their PR department saying that no decision has been made, or at least it has not been announced. But Woody Page is going with the notion that Peyton Manning is done and he will retire. I trust Woody Page. I spend a lot of time in Denver. I trust that he knows what he's talking about. And it's not that you don't have to connect the dots, really. I mean, this isn't like he's not announcing a 32-year-old Peyton Manning retiring. I mean, he's announcing a 40-year-old Peyton Manning retiring. Even if his sources are good, it's still a lot of us could have come with that, you know, connection. It's not that difficult. I think it's weird to me, though, how many people in a poll, I think it was close to 70%, wanted to see Peyton Manning retire. And I'm wondering if it has anything to do with, hey, listen, you come out with a Super Bowl, man. It's like there's no other better way to leave. Leave with the title. Leave with the parade. Kind of complete the storybook career. Or how many people are like, I just don't want to see a 40-year-old Peyton Manning struggling. I knew what I was getting last year. I wasn't really getting Peyton Manning that I grew to love. I got Peyton Manning on basic, you know, on easy. And so I wonder where people who are voting, yes, I want to see Manning retire, are they doing it out of, man, the story would be great? Or are they doing it like, man, I just don't want to continue to see this thing?
Do you think that, you know, I was thinking about this earlier today after I saw all that stuff last night and the other day. Do you think people felt the same way about, like, Jerome Bettis and Ray Lewis after they won?
Yeah.
Do you think they wanted them to come back, or they would just really like the fact that they were going out on top?
Yeah, see, here's the thing. When you ask an athlete to go out on top, you better make sure that it's over, right? Like, it's over. And I, you kind of knew with Jerome Bettis that he was kind of tailing off a little bit. But, you know, if Jerome wanted to do one more season, he could have easily done it.
Right, and Ray Lewis is the same way.
Yeah, same way, could have easily done it. I don't know if Manning can.
Right, yeah.
You know, that's like, I just don't know if he can. I mean,
especially at such an important position. Oh, I mean, if you have to take out Peyton Manning from quarterback, I mean, that's a big deal. I mean, they already had to do it with the injury, obviously. And then they didn't put him right back in when he came back healthy. So it's a dangerous situation.
I remember when Gary Kubiak announced that he was going to be the starter for their first playoff game against the Steelers. You know, they didn't know they were going to play the Steelers, but no matter who they were going to play, Manning was going to get the start. And I remember thinking, man, this guy has had a lot of heartbreaking losses in Denver since he's arrived. Losing to the Ravens, getting destroyed by the Seahawks, losing to Indianapolis. I was really worried that his play against the Steelers could cost him the game. Now, he played well enough, but he didn't play all that well. And against the Patriots, he threw those early two touchdowns and then was pretty much shut down the rest of the way. Against the Carolina Panthers, he in the Super Bowl, he didn't have to do anything. So it's not like Peyton's got this resume of, hey, look what I can still do. He showed zilch in the final three games of that playoff stretch. He showed zilch. And so I wonder how many people are like, listen, man, don't do it. I don't want to watch you throw 25 interceptions, okay, for the Rams or whoever. I don't need that. Run away with the title and go off into the sunset of your career. We love you. Goodbye.
Well, and the other thing is, he's obviously not going back to the Broncos. So the fact is, like, we all keep saying the Rams because that was the first team he was connected to.
Yeah, that was
to.
The team that made, like, so there was an overture that was a connection by somebody and just stuck.
Exactly. There's not a true playoff contender that you look at this team and you're like, okay, they're one player away from making the playoffs. No, none of those teams are going to look at Peyton Manning and be like, okay, this is the guy to get us to the playoffs. So yeah, he's probably going to go to a sub-500 team to be their quarterback for 1 year and then retire. And it's kind of just like, as fans, we look at it and it's just like, it's pointless. But I mean, to a player, he may not feel done, and it's $15 million.
I wonder, I got to go back to the winter, March of 2012, almost 4 years ago. And I remember going in, I had just moved to Nashville. And I remember going into a radio station. It was the leading station in Nashville, and I had a meeting with the program director, and we were talking, and it was the day that everyone in the city was buzzing about Peyton Manning arriving at the Titans camp, arriving at Titans facility to talk to them about possibly joining the Titans. And there was a lot of speculation that he was going to sign with Tennessee because, you know, he played college ball at Tennessee. His wife was from Tennessee. He knew the division really well, so he could stay within the division and whatnot. And so, you know, this is what was, you know, really popular. And I remember I wasn't late for the meeting, but the guy I was meeting with was late for the meeting because they were dealing with a lot of breaking news about this. It was a lot of buzz and a lot of chatter. And I remember driving after my meeting to my wife's office. We were taking a lunch, and she asked me, she said, do you think Peyton Manning is going to play with the Titans? And I said, I think he's going to. And then one of the hosts had said that there was a press conference scheduled and the Titans were going to sign him. And then everyone was shocked when he went with the Broncos. And I think about that because having seen the Titans over the last 4 years just struggle with Locker and Mike Munchak and then leading way to Ken Wisenhunt, and then that didn't work out, and Mettenberger and now Marcus Mariota. I just wonder what the Titans would have been like with Peyton Manning under center. Because the thing about Manning was that while he was able to do really good things, the Denver Broncos management really did a good job of putting a good team around him. It took a while to build that defense up. And I wonder if the Titans would have done the same thing. Yeah, Manning would have immediately led to a lot more victories than the Titans had over the last 4 years. But would he have gotten them consistently in the playoffs every single year in a division where, you know, Andrew Luck was starting to lead the Colts? Would he have done that against a good defensive Houston team? I don't know. But I know this, his time in Denver, the numbers are staggering of what he simply meant to a franchise that just in 2010 had lost to the Raiders when the Oakland Raiders came into Denver and scored 59 points against the Broncos. He had changed that entire team around from a, oh my God, we got Tim Tebow, we don't even know how we're winning games, to a playoff team, a division winner, a two-time Super Bowl appearance, and one Super Bowl championship.
I mean, I look at Manning, if he would have went to the Titans, I mean, I don't even know that. I mean, 500 would be a good record for them, even with Manning, because there was nobody there.
There was nothing there.
And let's look at what they've done with terrible teams that have picked high.
But
they haven't even got big-time talent.
But what you're not considering is the Manning factor leads free agents to come to you. So the Titans were not a destination. You know, they're a lousy team.
Right.
But does Manning lead other players to go, you know what, I want to talk to the Titans. They've got Manning. I want to play with Manning. And defensively, they're doing, you know, they might be doing something else. I don't know. But that's what I'm wondering. If over the 4 years, if he had gone to Tennessee, could he have taken that franchise place? You're absolutely right. The team's not very good. But I wonder if their inability over 4 years to really generate something was based on just massive inconsistencies and just the idea that the team's not really going anywhere. Because Yeah, there hasn't been really good receivers here like he has with Demaryius Thomas, or he had with Eric Decker at the time. Or
whatever. Manuel
Manuel Sanders. He didn't have that. But I wonder if he could have lured some guys over there. I don't know. But just that one decision. I mean, the Broncos weren't one player away. They were a pretty destructive team. Manning goes there. They've had nothing but success. Nothing but success the second he got there. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. All right, so we were talking earlier about Peyton Manning and going to the Broncos and kind of changing that team immediately. I mean, the Broncos went from, hey, Tim Tebow's the quarterback, and we don't, how are we 8-8 making the playoffs, to a legitimate Super Bowl contender. And Woody Page of the Denver Post wrote that, you know, Elway and Manning met at a golf course. He met at Cherry Hills Country Club. And Elway told Manning he would do what was done for him towards the end of his career. He'd surround the quarterback with enough talent to get back to the Super Bowl. Manning joined the Broncos. Elway acquired all pros and drafted future Pro Bowlers, changed personnel, fired a successful coach, brought in Gary Kubiak, and gave Manning the best defense in the league. Manning gave Elway everything he had, the greatest passing season in league history, and then all he had left in his final season, one more return from injury and three victories in the postseason. And we were talking about, and I was talking about, whether or not he could have changed the fortunes of the Tennessee Titans. If he had joined the Titans like a lot of people thought he would he have been able to turn the fortunes? And I got to say that I think he would have done, you know, he would have immediately gave the Titans winning records or whatnot, but I don't know if he would have done the same thing in Tennessee that he did in Denver. I don't know if Rustin Webster would have been able to surround Peyton Manning with the kind of talent John Elway was able to surround him with while he was with the Broncos. So I would have to say that while Manning would have immediately made an impact, because he was just too good of a quarterback not to, you know, make an immediate impact and change the win-loss column for a team. Two Super Bowls, winning the division with ease, setting, you know, the single season passing records and touchdown records. I don't think that would have occurred in Nashville. I think it was a great storm brewing with Elway at the helm. And I've said for a number of times how I think people underestimated how good John Elway is at being a front office personnel man. You know, and I questioned it when he was hired, whether or not it was going to be more of a PR move, more of a feel-good move. Because a lot of people don't remember that the Broncos, when John Elway was hired, the Broncos were going through the Josh McDaniel years. And not only the Josh McDaniel years, but there was an embarrassing incident in which McDaniels was accused and later, you know, later found out to have filmed the walkthrough of the San Francisco 49ers when they were in London for their game. So there was this, you know, embarrassing Spygate part two with the Broncos this time, and they were very, very embarrassed. And the team wasn't very good. And as I said earlier, they had lost to the Oakland Raiders, came in and beat them, put up 59 on the board. Everything was a mess. Everything was a disaster. And Pat Bowlen went out and hired John Elway. So you can automatically make the assumption that, oh, well, all right. Well, I mean, in the end, this is to make everybody feel good. The prince of the city, you know, the king of the city, John Elway, is now the face of the management of the Denver Broncos. As if the organization was saying, I know that we put you, the team in the city, and you as a fan in embarrassing situations, but we are going to make this right. Look at the person that you love the most to have ever worn a Broncos uniform. Well, he is going to be making some key decisions going forward now. So you can see it immediately being a great PR move to get sort of past all the embarrassment of the Josh McDaniels years. But instead, what they ended up getting was an extremely savvy, smart front office guy who happens to be a Super Bowl quarterback hero. Those two don't automatically go hand in hand. Many of you know and probably can recite all of the former players in all sorts of sports that just didn't make it at front office personnel. But Elway was very smart and knowing exactly how to put this team together. And convincing Peyton Manning to come to Denver When in all likelihood, look, if I'm heading to the tail end of my career and I know I still can do some great things and I'm coming off neck surgery, and I got to be honest with you. If I was Peyton Manning, I'd go to the Tennessee Titans. And I'd probably go to the Tennessee Titans out of vengeance for the Colts, even though what the Colts did made total sense. I'm like, yeah, I get to play the Colts twice a year. And I'm in a state that is just in love with him to this day. It seemed too perfect of a marriage, but we've seen this a lot of times, right? If something's too good, you kind of run away from it a little bit. That it's just too good. Oh, the NFL team in the state of where I played my college ball, where my wife's from, where we still have a house. At one point they were offering them like part ownership of the team. It was like crazy. The stuff that was coming out. No. I think I'll go somewhere else. And why not go to a team that is run by a guy that did what you're trying to do in the later part of your career? Why not pick the brain of the guy that won a Super Bowl at 37? Right? That won a Super Bowl at 38. And find out what he knows about playing the position that late in the season. I don't think the Titans could come close to something like that. So the Peyton Manning that we're talking about this week, setting himself up to retire, the Peyton Manning that got the parade, the Peyton Manning that turned the fortunes of a franchise around in the later part of his career, his second act was so very, very good. Even if it didn't close out very good in terms of performance, it turned out very, very good in terms of result. He finally got that city a Super Bowl. 4 years, he finally got that city the Super Bowl they thought that they were going to get with him. And I just don't think it would have happened in Nashville. I just don't. I think that a lot of things in Denver had to be in place other than Manning, and that included having the right general manager, and that was John Elway. And that's just the way I project it. Sure, would the Titans have won 8-9 games? Of course. And Peyton Manning's not going to go 5-12. Or 5-11, I'm sorry. He's just not. He's going to win you games. He shouldn't. Even if your team is lacking in a couple of things, he's going to pull it out. But he's not. I just don't think with the team that right away they would have gone 13-3 or 14-2. I just don't. Not with that team.
Do you think,
would have taken a while.
Do you think Manning follows Elway's footsteps and, you know, maybe goes to Tennessee and
takes
over?
See, I was wondering. That's a great question. I wonder about that a lot. If I'm Manning, do I want to jump into the front office machine, or do I want to dabble in broadcasting a little bit? I think Manning should dabble in broadcasting and then figure out the front office like later when he's like in his late 40s.
Yeah.
You know? But I think he does.
Take a few years, have some fun, yeah. Get away from the game, get away from the daily grind of NFL.
Look, John Gruden hasn't gone back to coaching.
Right.
Bill Cowher hasn't gone back to coaching. Yeah. I mean, these guys are having a blast, and they're doing a fraction of the work, and they're almost getting paid the same. Gruden's probably making more doing Monday Night Football than he ever did with the Bucks or the Raiders.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he's making $7, $8 million a year? I don't think he was pulling that kind of money with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
No way.
Right? So, Bill Cowher, I don't know what his deal with CBS is, but the workload and the pay, if I'm Manning, I ride that for a couple of years. But I do think Manning is really, his brain is an encyclopedia of football. And when your brain is built like that, I think you want to use it in the best way you can. And I wouldn't be shocked at all. And here's the other thing. You can't win a Super Bowl as a broadcaster, but you can as a general manager, and I think he still wants to win Super Bowls. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us. All right, let's focus on some college basketball. We're just a couple of weeks away from Selection Sunday. And let's talk about the Big 12. Again, Kansas is going to win at least a share of the conference championship. I think you got to go all the way back to when James Naismith was there the last time Kansas didn't win a conference. But it's actually been 12 years. Scott Phillips joins us, NBCSports.com, to talk about the Big 12 and the Jayhawks. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on.
All right, so I've always said parity doesn't always equal excellence. We seem to have a lot of parity in the Big 12, and but is the conference? Did we get a lot of excellence out of this conference?
I think so. Obviously, the tournament will be the ultimate deciding factor of success in the number of people's minds. But given how good this league is from top to bottom, even the number 8 team in Kansas State is feisty enough to pick up wins over Oklahoma and other good programs. Texas Tech has really emerged recently under Tubby Smith, and they've done a fantastic job. And then you just look at that power, kind of group at the top with Kansas, West Virginia, Oklahoma, Baylor, Texas, Iowa State have been top 25 stalwarts all year. So this is just, a top-to-bottom, very good league.
All right, is this a 7-team Selection Sunday conference?
I think so, given the way that Texas Tech has come on strong recently, and they've picked up some key wins over top 25 teams. That's really going to look good to their resume. And if they're able to win another game in the Big 12 tournament and win down the stretch here, I see the Red Raiders getting in as the 7th team. And again, a very good and deep league this year. I think Texas Tech is a team that people might be sleeping on entering this tournament. Iowa State could be dangerous. Baylor and Texas certainly have shown that they can beat top teams as well. And just a fun league overall this season.
As far as Kansas, they're a little bit more veteran-laden. In that respect, are they better than a couple of the teams that Bill Self has had there?
I don't think they're as talented, but they're more balanced, and they know what they have, and they know what they're capable of. And you don't see this group play outside of themselves very often. They're able to get things done within their limitations of not having a star or a go-to guy. And guys like Perry Ellis and Frank Mason and Devontae Graham and Wayne Seldon are consistent players for the most part. And Seldon's on and off a little bit, but he's generally going to give you in the teens and scoring. And just so many of these other guys off the bench now are stepping up recently. Brandon Green is a tremendous three-point specialist. Landon Lucas has really emerged as a big man that can really haul down rebounds for them. And they just have a whole bunch of veteran bigs and guys like Jamari Traylor and Hunter Mickelson that are seniors who can come off the bench and give minutes. And there's a lot of talent, young talent here as well, with guys like Carlton Bragg and Sheck Diallo and Steve McCalick. And again, just a lot of balance and depth on this team. They don't have a go-to guy, but I think that they're comfortable with different guys taking over down the stretch and making plays.
When I look at Oklahoma, and I love the way Buddy Hield plays, but who on that team outside of Hield has to step up for the Sooners if they're going to make a deep run?
I think they're definitely more than Buddy Hield, as you mentioned, but I think the guy that has to be really good for them in the tournament is Isaiah Cousins. He's had great stretches of play this season, as has Jordan Woodard, their other guard, but Cousins has the ability to take over a game that I don't know if Woodard has, and if he's the second guy behind Hield who's really forcing defenses to pay attention to him as well, then that makes Oklahoma a very tough team to stop.
What is the hallmark or the definition of what West Virginia does, either offensively or defensively?
Well, they're known as Press Virginia because they're going to play you 94 feet. They're going to throw different guys at you with different traps the length of the floor. And really that size and athleticism that Bob Huggins has incorporated into that roster really makes them effective with turnovers. They lead the country in forced turnovers. They really dictate the pace of play and really a bruising kind of style where they're up in your face almost the entire game and play with a lot of swagger and enthusiasm. And again, they're going to be a team that's predicated on turning you over. If you're able to limit turnovers against West Virginia, usually you can beat that press and get some open looks, but if you don't beat that press, watch out, it could get ugly very fast.
What's the kind of belief about press defenses when it comes to the NCAA tournament, where it's sort of one, you got to keep going against different teams?
Well, it's tough to prepare for because again, some of these teams on, 1 or 2 days preparation to prepare for a press like West Virginia haven't faced something like that in a long time. And maybe certainly not to the magnitude that West Virginia presents in terms of their length and athleticism. But, in a tournament setting, if you don't have the capable ball handlers on the floor to handle that sort of press, again, you can unravel very quickly. Even if West Virginia is down by, 10 to 12 points in the second half, they're not out of a game because their defense forces turnovers at such a rapid rate that they can get a couple quick buckets off the turnovers and be right back in any game.
I want to ask you about Texas because Shaka Smart comes in replacing Rick Barnes. he inherited some good talent, but a lot of times it takes a year to really get things going. How did Shaka Smart adjust to the talent that he had so to give Texas the success that it has?
Well, I think Shaka Smart's just a darn good coach, and there's evidence of that with how well this team has played since losing Cameron Ridley, their best big man. And really, he had a lot of talent here, as you mentioned, but he was just able to incorporate it in a way that he utilized some of his old system at VCU, where he pressed a little bit. He had capable ball handlers in Isaiah Taylor, who's having a very good year in Big 12 play. And really, just they've come together nicely with a lot of home support and enthusiasm. Their home games have been very tough this year. They have 3 wins against top 10 teams at home in North Carolina and Oklahoma and West Virginia. So they've been really tough to play in Austin, and really just building a strong foundation for that program. They have a lot of marquee recruits already signed for this next class. They're involved in a couple other potential, notable players that could come in and help right away. And Shaka Smart's really building a solid foundation here for a lot of success for years to come in Texas.
You know, my brother went to the University of Kentucky, and when I was with them a couple of weekends ago, we were joking that we kind of forgot that Tubby Smith was at Texas Tech, and now we shouldn't forget he's at Texas Tech because they're playing some pretty good basketball. Is this a sleeper good basketball team that the Red Raiders are?
I think they're very tough, and they're not going to bring the name brand talent that a lot of these other Big 12 programs have in terms of, you know, who's who of former McDonald's All-Americans and top 100 recruits, but this is just a team that gets it, and they're balanced. They have a lot of veterans, and really, I think it's impressive that they came back from that losing streak they had in Big 12 play and had the recent stretch of games where they knocked off some top 25 teams in order to make them a credible NCAA tournament threat. I think that shows how tough this team is. They're resilient. They have a lot of guys who can score. They have good play from guys like Aaron Ross off the bench and Devontae Williams and Tadrick Gocher and Zach Smith. And again, just a team that people need to be aware of, because a lot like Kansas and some of these other teams, this is a veteran ball club that has a lot of different guys who can score.
Scott Phillips joins us, NBCSports.com, Big 12, and the Kansas Jayhawks are going to win a share of the conference title. I guess I'll ask you about Iowa State. I know Fred Hoiberg left, but they were looking for their identity. I guess they found it. Tell me about the Cyclones.
I'm really concerned about the Cyclones down the stretch here, and I think it starts with Jameel McKay. He's their center, who is a defensive force early in the season, was scoring for them as well, and was suspended during Big 12 play and really hasn't recovered mentally from that. He's just been distant and hasn't been very strong in a lot of games recently, and their play is shown as a result of that. They've had a lot of recent losses and not looked nearly as good against elite level teams, and I'm just really concerned about their play down the stretch, because they've only beaten really one tournament team in the last month, and they need to show that they're able to play against elite level competition in this Big 12 tournament in order to show that they can make a run to the second or third weekend. George Niang is still tremendous. Monty Morris is one of the best point guards in the country. And, you know, Nader's done a nice job as a scorer as well, but they need to get Jameel McKay back on track, because he's a vital component to their rim protection. And he's probably their only big man capable of really stopping people on the defensive end.
All right, one thought on there's just the national scene and sort of the lack of a dominant basketball team, or at least two dominant basketball teams, is if you're in the top five, it's just a matter of time before somebody knocks you off. On the one hand, I can see people saying, hey, this is great. It means so many other teams are in it. It means it's a wide open tournament. But on the other hand, I feel like the season is missing something. How do you feel about the way where we are in college basketball?
Well, there's not as much of a juggernaut star player or star team this year, and I think that hurts the credibility in terms of the common fan in some cases, because a lot of, you know, those fans that adjust late to the college basketball season, come in, maybe watch the tournament only or the weeks leading up to it, they don't have that force that they can identify with, that undefeated juggernaut Kentucky team, that Wisconsin back-to-back Final Four team. They don't have kind of the name recognition with a lot of these players that they've seen in the past. So I think that there's some people kind of searching for how the tournament's going to go, but for the college basketball fan, it's going to be a ton of fun. As you said, there's been a number of different number one teams and top five teams that have been upset this year. There's a ton of parity in the game, and there's, you know, seeds that are all the way down to the 13, 14, 15 line right now that are dangerous teams that could win a game or two in this tournament. And there could be a lot of crazy upsets. You could see a champion emerge from any number of different seeds, and it should really make for a fun March Madness this year.
Scott Phillips, again, great stuff. Thank you very much for your time tonight.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
All right, coming back, we'll talk about whether or not it's good for college basketball not to have a dominating team or two, or maybe three. The wide openness of this tournament, does it make you look forward to it more? Or do you want to see some giants and the possibility of those giants being taken down? We'll talk about that next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. That too.
Back to the Quick and Loud Studios.
And back to Tony D.
All right, someone asked a question. Open up the phone lines, 800-777-2907. You can also hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. Again, 800-777-2907. Does the nature of where college basketball is right now make the tournament more fun, or do you miss the slaying of the Giants? Because there's no Giants here. Let's be honest. If you hate Duke, if you're the one that does, you dance a little jig every time the Duke Blue Devils are beaten in the NCAA tournament, oh, you can still have your Duke hate party, but it's not going to feel as good. They're vulnerable. If you hate Kentucky and like to see somebody give John Calipari the business, heck, he might get it at the SEC tournament in Nashville in a couple of weeks. He might not even win that. They're vulnerable. They just lost to Vanderbilt. Boy, SEC is... I can't wait to go watch the SEC tournament. SEC basketball. Maybe we'll make the tournament fever. Catch it. Oh, God. At least I might get to see Ben Simmons for 10 minutes. But do you like the slaying of the Giants? Do you like the idea of an unbeaten Kentucky going down? Do you like the idea of Duke and the high and mighty Blue Devils going down? Or anybody else in college basketball that's got a strong record, maybe got a little attitude, maybe got a little chip? Let me tell you, when I went to college, I was going to college during the Bobby Hurley, Christian Laettner years. And there was nothing more fun than rooting for Duke. I loved rooting against Duke. I knew they were going to be strong in the tournament. I knew they were going to be perennial favorites. I loved rooting against them. And it made my college basketball life miserable, but it didn't matter. UNLV. Remember how good UNLV was back in the day? Same kind of thing. You were wondering, is anybody going to beat UNLV? Happened to be that one year Duke did it, and I was like, you know, you can't have everything, I guess. But those Giants and the slaying of them, or the bringing down of those Giants, make the tournament really interesting. This year, I'm not kidding. You get a one seed and you lose to an eight. I'm not gonna jump up and down going, this is one of the biggest upsets of all time. Not this year. All right, we're wide open. Now, I know some of you are going to say, but Tony, look, this makes it more fun. I've got 15 teams that could win the national title. Okay, that's true. But I'm going to argue with you that in a lot of the years, you have more teams than you think about that could win the NCAA tournament. It's not always the Kentuckys and the Dukes and the, you know, the UCLAs or whoever. It's not all those teams, or the Louisvilles, the Michigan States. You know, sometimes it's Butler almost beating Duke. Right? Sometimes it's UConn getting hot in the Big East tournament, only to carry that over into the NCAA tournament and winning it. Then winning it twice, beating Kentucky, an eight seed that caught fire at the tournament at the right time. Sometimes it's a lot more open than we think. Sometimes a George Mason gets to the Final Four. Maybe the stage got overwhelming, but they get there. What I'm looking at, though, is a college basketball presence, that is just lacking that one team that people can either see that is just needs to be taken down, or can they complete the journey? No, it's not Kansas, and it's not Oklahoma, it's not Villanova, it's not Duke, it's not North Carolina, it's not Michigan State. These teams are all capable of winning it all but losing in the Sweet 16. It's that open. Let's go to Robin in Tulsa. You're next up on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Good morning, Tony. How you doing?
Good. How are you, man?
Doing fine, thanks. Hey, I'm more excited about it this year than normal because I like the parody in it, and you never know what's going to happen from night to night.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. Those moments where you went, wow, did you see what happened? Do they lose the luster because, yep, you know what? It is conceivable that Duke could lose in the second round of this tournament. They've had some flaws and they could be exposed. Or do you like that moment where you're like, I never saw that coming and I can't believe they're out of the tournament?
No, I still like the parody. And I heard last hour talking about the Big 12. And let me tell you what, Oklahoma's going to go as far as Isaiah Cousins will take them, because if you're going to double Buddy Hield, He had 23 points in the first half on Saturday, and Cousins wouldn't get him the ball the second half. He's like was playing ball hog and taking bad shots. He only had 10 points in the second half. Buddy Hill did.
Yeah, I know. I remember that. Yeah, absolutely. What about James Woodard? Because I think he's more of a key, too.
He is, but I think you're going to have their big three, Spangler, Cousins, and Heald. I mean, you need Spangler inside, too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm really curious as to where Oklahoma's going, because I've liked them all year, and I'm really curious to how far they can go.
Well, they've been playing so good the last month, so
I know.
We'll see what happens in the Big 12 tournament.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Robin. Appreciate it. All right, so there's one vote for the parody. Yeah, I'm telling you, I've given you both sides. And as a guy, I love college basketball. I've said for many years, the NCAA tournament, I enjoy it. I love it. I go to my favorite wing place on the Thursday when it starts. Now that we can thankfully call it the first round, by the way, thank
right,
you.
Yes.
I mean, God, I was so confused. I used to say, I'm going to those first round games. They're like, well, you mean the second round? Shut up.
Yeah,
exactly. It's the first round. What's wrong with you? Don't buy into the man. It's the first round games. If you're not in the round of 64 yet, you're not in the first round
right.
of the tournament.
Yes.
I think you're in the play-in games.
To parody, you've said it a million times on here. Parody doesn't make good basketball.
Right.
It doesn't mean it's all good. If we have 15 really good teams playing for the national title, okay, then that's fine. But when we've got 15 okay teams, then I would rather have a few really, really good teams fighting it out.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I love this. I like the tournament. It's quirky. It's a little strange. But I think I'm going to miss the Giant. Yahoo Sports Radio.